You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Pour yourself a cold one.
They strike them, huh?
And listen to Ross Tucker break down the top college prospects on another tasty edition of The College Draft.
Yeah, it's Daddy Soda time here on the College Draft Podcast, presented, of course, as always, by DraftKings. I'm Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years, thank goodness. Now I got all these different media gigs and podcasts, and I love going ahead and have everybody say hello if I get a chance to see you, and you listen to the show or you watch. What a perfect day for the College Draft Podcast. Now listen, I'm going to primarily ask my guru, my expert, Emory Hunt, about the first round picks today, because after this, we're going to really get into the rest of the draft for each team, as well as the undrafted free agents of note. So just as a reminder, nobody else does this that I'm aware of. Everybody says, oh, you got to go back and talk about... No. They just move on to, like, talking about other things. Not us. Like, we're going to talk about every pick in the draft. And Emery's even going to tell you his favorite undrafted free agent or two on each team over the next 9 weeks or whatever it is. Because if we're going to put that much time in on the front end, let's get the joy out of it on the back end and really break down what these teams got, what your team got, before we move ahead to the 2024 college football season. When I talk about Emory, of course, I'm talking about the czar of the playbook, and he even has the t-shirt to prove it. For those of you watching, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL had an awesome year with the draft guide, with sales, and rightfully so. Guess what? It's not over. footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. You want to actually see scouting reports on all of the undrafted guys that your team signed or late round picks? He's got it. footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. These guys are getting drafted, and I'm seeing, I already was able to go right to Emory's scouting report on all of them. It was awesome. Check him out on social media at FBallGamePlan or FootballGamePlan on YouTube. We are youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL. I'm at RossTuckerNFL on social. We are at RossTuckerPod. Obviously, it means a great deal, those of you that rate and review the show. If you ever have a specific question for Emory, just rate and review the show and then forward that, you know, take a screenshot of it, forward it to me with your question for Emory. I love it. We'll get right into it, just like we'll get right into the first round. I guess I have specific questions for you, Emory, for sure. I guess I like to go macro, though. It doesn't have to be the first round, whether it's the first round or just the NFL draft in general. Anything really stand out to you this year? Anything that you thought was unique or different this year as opposed to other years?
One, just seeing how much we were offensive heavy in the first round. I know that was talked about a lot. The over-under prior to the draft for offensive players selected was 21.5, and we crushed that. You know, it was like 23 or 24, I believe. So it shows you, you know, this year's draft strength was offense. And not necessarily that offense outweighs defense, that in the first round, a lot of the top-end talent was on the offensive side of the football. The first defensive player goes 15th, Eliatu Latu, to the Colts. That was the first big thing. And another thing that just really stood out to me overall, I found myself, I don't know if this was first round or maybe day two, probably was day two, as we were watching it and waiting for it to wrap up, I was like, I was getting ready to tweet out, man, let's just bring back the 2-day draft, the cigarette smoke, all, just bring it all back, because we're kind of stretching this out too far. But I do feel like, you know, the NFL will never go back to that because it's a TV product. I get it. But, man, I missed the 2-day long extravaganza that was the NFL draft on the weekend.
It really is wild that the first defensive player didn't go off the board until pick 15. Leiatu Latu to the Colts. I'll say this, Emery. Never's a long time, but I highly doubt that happens again in my lifetime. I mean, just think about the odds of that.
Right.
There's as many guys on the field on defense as there are, I guarantee if you're playing football, there's as many guys on defense as there are on offense. So for the first 14 picks to all be offense, I mean, for the sixth quarterback to go off the board before the first defensive player, I mean, what are we even talking about? What are we doing? That is wild to me. So some of the things I have specific questions for you, Emery, that I think are interesting, and I can go back in your draft guide and your rankings, but we'll start at the top with the decision by the Chargers to take Joe Alt over J.C. Latham or some of these other offensive linemen at number five overall, especially because it sounds like Alt will play right tackle, which I think is interesting to draft the guy that high, and then the first thing you're going to do is move his position. I mean, I'm sure he'll be fine, but definitely people are more comfortable one side or the other, and there's a lot of people pointing towards J.C. Latham for the Chargers. What do you think of those two players and really sort of the Chargers' decision to take Alt and move him to right side, supposedly?
You know, I had a high grade on five offensive tackles, like 80s and above, right? So for me, it was like, hey, you could shake him up in the bag and pull out one, and this is the guy you want to go with, and I would have been fine with it. So the choice of Alt, who was my number two, over a guy like Latham, who I believe was like my number four or three or four offensive tackle, didn't bother me at all because, again, this is their elite prospects in my eyes. Alt, I feel like, can make the move to right tackle. I mean, he was a former tight end, so he was already on the right side. You know, and so he understands how to move on that side. And plus, you don't want to move Rashawn Slater, who's been a stud already. You kind of want to have him just sit there. And again, this offensive line is just great. Latham, yes, probably been a more natural plug and play right tackle. But you can't go wrong with Alt or Latham. So I didn't have a problem with the pick. I'm glad they did take an offensive lineman. But it shows you, because they didn't take a receiver until like late day two, I believe. So they're heavily emphasizing running the football this year.
No question about it. What about the Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr. instead of Malik Nabers? Same type of deal, Emery?
Same deal. Like, again, I had a Pro Bowl grade on Nabers, Pro Bowl grade on Harrison Jr. And you look at what they did last year, bringing in Michael Wilson out of Stanford. So I like the fit within this offense, and the Cardinals low-key, we'll talk about this in the upcoming weeks, they had a phenomenal draft. You know, they knocked it out the park. Harrison Jr. gives them another big dog on the outside, and I'm excited to see how this passing game sort of plays itself out, because you get a guy in Marvin Harrison Jr. who you feel like can take, can pull double coverage. We know Michael Wilson, when healthy, can do his thing in one-on-one or vice versa. So you kind of create a situation where you make it tougher for defenses to defend you. So I didn't have a problem with Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, or Marvin Harrison Jr. Whoever was going to be the first one, I would have been like, yeah, okay, that's a great pick.
Do you, because I know you do a lot of stuff up in North Jersey with the Giants. If you were the Giants, would you have taken J.J. McCarthy at quarterback instead of Daniel Jones, or would you have done what they did and take Nabers?
I would have taken Nabers. If anything, I would have traded back into the first, but obviously you didn't have to because he went in the fifth round. I would have found a way to get Spencer Rattler, probably on day two. You know, we saw how late he went on day three in the fifth round. So you had a chance multiple times over to get a guy that can help you win. Even the Jets took Jordan Travis, on day three. The Giants bypassed both guys. Now, maybe they have an eye to 2025. Maybe they're in the Shedeur Sanders sweepstakes. But to not bring in a young guy to develop, behind Daniel Jones and Drew Lock, that was kind of a question mark. But I didn't question getting an elite player at six.
I'm curious your opinion, Emery. Everybody's got their own thoughts on it. came out on social media as well as with Dan Patrick. Curious your thoughts on what the Falcons did with Michael Penix Jr. at number 8.
Listen, I don't hate the pick. This is the part that is questionable to me, because it makes sense when you think about, we got a 36-year-old quarterback that wasn't mobile to begin with, coming off of an Achilles injury. We need a guy to be, you know, to be the starter in waiting, right? Not necessarily backup, because I don't like using that word, right? But if that's the case, why would you sign that guy in the first place? That's the biggest concern, because, yes, he's 36 years old, not really mobile, coming off of an Achilles injury. Why would you give him all that money? The pick itself makes sense because of the talent and the reasoning. And it's funny because you saw all the people that was hating on the pick were all the same people that said, you got to draft the quarterback every year. You know, but wait, okay, here's someone drafted a quarterback and you hate it, right? So I think that the pick, we probably will see Penix earlier than expected, because I don't think Cousins is ready to go. He tore his Achilles 9 weeks after Aaron Rodgers did. So his recovery is a little bit going to be a little bit longer than Rodgers, who is just getting back and, you know, doing some stuff, you know, in the offseason program. So it makes sense. You may need a guy that can start right now, that has played a lot of games, that fits the mold of Penix, who is excellent throwing the ball down the field, getting the different receivers the ball. That's Penix. So there's a lot of similarities between Penix and Cousins. So why not get the guy that can help you right now until your $100+ million quarterback gets fully ready to go? So I understand it. The problem I have with it is, why sign Cousins to all that money if all of those things were the case going into him getting into free agency?
Problem I have, Emery, is why aren't more Sixers fans buying tickets to these home games on the Game Time app? I mean, the Sixers Knicks, it's like half Knicks fans. I love the Game Time app. Evidently, Knicks fans do as well, because they were all over the NBA playoff games in Philadelphia, especially the one yesterday. I don't blame them, though. It's so easy. I'm looking right now, right? You type in Philly. Next, Philly's home game, $42 on Friday, May 3rd. The Union, the soccer team, $11. Hershey Bears, right here, right down the street. They got a game Wednesday, $20. Sixers are $125 because the Knicks fans are driving up the price, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I love the all-in pricing. Love the last-minute deals on all these tickets. Take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use code DRAFT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply, so again, create an account and redeem code DRAFT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. And of course, if you can't go to the game, or even if you can, but if you can't go to the game, just drink some Labatt Blue Lights while you're watching these games. The weather's nice. I don't know why we just skipped right past the 70s and 60s. It was 55 on Saturday, and now it's going to be 85 today. Why do we have to just go right past the 60s and say, what is even happening with the world? At any rate, when it's in the 80s, you got to be drinking some ice-cold Labatt Blue Lights with your friends, living life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. All right, so one of the more interesting things to me, Emery, and it's funny because I actually talked about this with Greg Cosell on today's Ross Tucker Football Podcast. I was very surprised that the Eagles had their pick of the corners at 22. I mean, think about today's NFL. Teams draft like three corners each year, and the best guys are still on the board at 22 for the Eagles to have their pick. They went with Mitchell over Arnold. I forget, Emery, what your rankings were, but which guy would you have gone with if you were the Eagles, and why?
running with the same theme here, it was put him in the bag, shake him up, and pull out a corner, right? Because I had Arnold with an 80.5 grade, and I had Quinyon Mitchell with an 80 grade. So it was like they were one and the same. But it's fascinating to your point how the Eagles had their picks of the top corners. And they ended up getting two excellent corners because, again, once we say this every year, Ross, the draft is stupid. You know, you have teams passing on elite talent and good teams get elite players. And then week nine in the season, we're like, man, how the hell did this guy fall this far to this good team? This is why. So, I mean, they couldn't have gone wrong with any pick. Mitchell was someone elite ball skills, probably better ball skills than Arnold. Arnold is a technician, you know, and I love the fact that he has good footwork, good fundamentals, good technique. You know, he was starring opposite of Kool-Aid McKinstry. So either corner would have been fine, but I understand why they went with Mitchell. And it's just crazy that the Eagles were able to get, you know, let's say my number one B corner, right? Because I had Arnold as my number one, Mitchell as my number two, but only a half point difference.
Yeah, it's, you know, I realized, Emery, the last week before the draft, we broke down your DBs. Someone hit me up afterwards and said, you didn't talk about Cooper DeJean. And I didn't realize, I don't know where you had him, you know, whether you had him in the slot or safety or outside corner, you know, boundary corner or field corner, but wherever he was, he wasn't one of your top three guys. So now's a good time since you mentioned the Eagles and they got two good corners. What was your eval, Emery, of Cooper DeJean from Iowa?
He was my number six field corner with an 80.5. So the guys I had ahead of him were Max Melton, Nate Wiggins, Jarvis Brownlee, DJ James, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and then Cooper DeJean. So still had a 80 grade on him, 80.5, but still 80 and above on him. So very impressed with his game. So the fact that I had him as a field corner, which speaks to his athleticism, his ability to play off man coverage rather well. We know he has the ball skills. We know he has the special teams aspect, which was a running theme for the Eagles draft with the guys they drafted on day three. Special teams is going to be huge for Philly this year. And this is a guy that definitely can take the ball away. So they got a high-level player, a Pro Bowl-type talent, in my opinion, based off my grading, where they got him. You know, and it's crazy because DeJean was someone that is super athletic, highly instinctive. And when you're around the ball that much, that's the type of guy you want on your defense. So that's why we talk. And again, the reason why we didn't bring him up on the show, Ross, because you know how we do defensive backs. Boundary, field, slot, free, combo, strong, safety. So we got a lot of positions to cover. So we only do the top three and then mention the underrated and the small school guy because we're trying to fit it into the show.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. I didn't ask him about it today, but Greg Cosell had said that he had seen some stiffness in DeJean's game and thought he might end up at safety. I know you ranked him as a field corner. Where do you think he ends up in the NFL?
I say let him play defense, right? So wherever you want him to play, let him play. And I hope that they allow him to fail at corner first before just plopping him at safety, because that's where the true progression is. Hey, man, I played corner my whole football career. Let me fail first before we even entertain, you know, a position switch. Same with left tackles to right tackles, tackles to guards, you know, quarterbacks to tight end or whatever. Let me fail first before we even begin to talk about switching positions. But to my areas of improvement for him, one of them I have, he can get a little bit high in his back pedal, which can cause some issues in flipping his hips out of it. So that's to what Greg Cosell was talking about. So we saw the same things on DeJean. But at the end of the day, I feel like his strengths far outweigh his areas of improvement.
Got it. Some interesting O-linemen went in the 20s, Emery. The Packers took Jordan Morgan, 25th at Arizona. The Bucks got Graham Barton from Duke at 26. What did you think of those guys?
And the last guy that went, the Cowboys took Tyler Guyton.
Yeah.
Who was the last, he was my number seven tackler. He was the last one. He had a 79 grade, so he's right on the cusp, right? of that 80 grade. So I can understand at that juncture of the draft taking Guyton. Morgan was a bit of a surprise for me because for me, and I'll tell you right now, he was my, I want to say 12th tackle or something like that, 13th tackle with a 78 grade. So you saw a little bit of a gap there. But I guess at this point of the draft, I get it. 25, cool. Barton, I was torn between, is he a guard? Is he a tackle? And you see him being drafted as a center because he has played all three. So it's about where they wanted to see him play. So I don't mind, you know, Graham Barton because of his flexibility and, you know, where he can play in that need. So he was my 14th offensive tackle. So he was right behind Morgan. So I guess all those guys kind of went at that part of the draft where, okay, we can get offensive linemen. The run has happened. So we got to secure our guys now because they won't be around when we pick again late on, you know, late in the second round, if we even have a second round pick. So I can understand it, but the Morgan one was a bit of a surprise for Green Bay, especially with Guyton sitting right there. Maybe they like Morgan's versatility a little bit more, but I felt like all three guys, again, you saw the grades 79, 78 and a half, 78, 77 and a half, something like that. So they all are right there. That they're second round grades, but we're talking now pick 25 to 29. So, you know, it kind of makes sense.
What about Emory, the last two receivers that went in the first round, Ricky Pearsall from Florida to the Niners and Xavier Leggett from South Carolina to the Carolina Panthers. I thought it was interesting seeing the reaction of like C.J. Stroud. He was distraught that the Niners got Ricky Pearsall. He really wanted him. Brandon Ayuk really liked him. It seemed like Ricky Pearsall was like a favorite of a lot of current players for some reason.
Yeah, he's your receiver's receiver, man. When you go, and this is someone that stood out when you're grading Anthony Richardson's film. He was like, the only dude out there that's helping Richardson out is Pearsall. Like, he's balling. The whole time, the whole season last year, Pearsall was the only one catching everything. Everybody else was dropping passes left and right, right? Pearsall was the only one that was getting open down the field, making catches, making tough catches, and we saw that highlighted this season. So Pearsall is a great talent. He was my number six flanker, so number six Z receiver. Leggett was my number five split in and had an 80 grade. Pearsall had a 77 and a half, right? So Leggett going in the last pick of the first round, you know, was kind of right. Probably should have gone a little bit early along with A.D. Mitchell, someone like that. But getting him where they did, it shows you they're getting guys that can do more with less. So he doesn't have to really win deep down the field to have success. You throw him a short pass, he can take it a long way. He's a big physical guy. Could be their primary X, in my opinion, a guy that can be the trusted go-to guy that can beat bump press. He's good after the catch. He's physical, so he could block in a run game. So this was a good pick by Carolina.
It's interesting. Out of the guys that didn't go in the first round, that kind of fell out of it, was there a guy or two that really jumped out to you that you had a really high grade on? So some of the guys at the top of round two, Keon Coleman, Ladd McConkey, Rook Aurora, Jerzon Newton, Jalen Polk, Tavondre Sweat, Braden Fisk, Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry. Then you get to Kamari Lassiter. I know you're a Max Melton fan. Who were you kind of most surprised that didn't go in the first round?
Well, when you look at the last two receivers taken, and then if you sub those guys out with A.D. Mitchell and Keon Coleman, it looks a lot better in terms of like, oh, these guys were projected to go in the first round, you know, because A.D. Mitchell was outstanding on tape, you know, irrespective to the quarterback play. And you also look at how Keon Coleman just gets buckets. Like, he's the Anthony Edwards of the receiver position. Like, someone that's brash. He's the George Pickens of this draft, you know. So I was shocked to see him not go. You want someone like that on the perimeter. But they both land in ideal spots. He's going to be a star in Buffalo. A.D. Mitchell's going to be a star in Indy, man. The AFC is going to be loaded. So I think that was the bigger surprise. But they went right at the, you know, the top of, you know, round two. So, it still works out for them. And it works out for the teams that were able to get them. Again, good teams getting good players is the common theme here in the draft.
Yeah, it sounds like there was some concern about McConkey and his back. Good fit for him going with the Chargers, it feels like.
And that was my number one slot receiver.
What's that? Yeah, what's that?
That was my number one slot receiver.
Yeah. Emery's always a good fit on this show. At FBall Game Plan on Twitter. Make sure you're telling everybody to check out our draft series over the next 2 months. We'll go division by division, talking about the pick for each team. So at a minimum, got to make sure all your buddies listen to the episode where it's your team's division. Other than that, the keg is kicked. We are all tapped out.
Thanks for tuning in to College Draft. Make sure to also check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and Fantasy Feast, all on the DraftKings Network, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.